we've been working on a Star Wars Galaxies emulator for the last year and a half or so. And in that time, I've developed some insights. Can you hear me? I have been. for the last year and a half, I've been working with this group. Been working on Even Closer. How's that?
Much better.
Sorry. It's been a year. Let me get this going here. I've developed some insights into and seen a lot of the ins and outs of working on an emulator for a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. Are any of you already familiar with the emulation efforts for Star Wars Galaxies? Part of the communities heard about it other than today? Okay, wow. All right. How many of you actually played Star Wars Galaxies or have a particular interest in that? Okay, great, great. Well, I'm going to try and do this as both a generic presentation that will give people who are interested in perhaps developing an emulator for another game or who may be interested in our project and helping out with that, some insight into that, as well as people who are interested in Star Wars Galaxies, particularly some ideas about what we've found and what we've come up against, and I'll try and save some room at the end for questions of both natures. Let me fire up my PowerPoint here so I know what I'm going to say, whether we have the video for it or not. Do you think I need to do anything for the Scott? Pardon? Back to difficulty hearing? That's better, though. Usually it's not a problem I've ever had. Talk too loud. Okay. We're going to start off with a definition of what emulation is. In its barest form, it's just to copy or to reproduce the functionality of something. And in this case, it's... Oh, there we go. Okay, and I get to play with my computer from over there because it's not on my screen. So you'll have to bear with me while I try and figure this out. Oh, come on. Tell me the mouse is working. Yeah, probably. Going very slowly. Emulation is reproducing the functionality. There we go. I got it. Reproducing the functionality of something, in this case, a program or an operating system. In theory, that's working right now. I can see it now. I can see this now. If you can, that would be great. Some of you may have played with emulators for things such as Windows emulator under Linux or under, say, OS X or other non-Windows operating systems, or maybe emulators for programs for console games that are, long dead or that your console will have rotted away and over the years. Well, at least this is starting. Now, if you can get it back up there, we're good. Wow, you... Yay. Okay, there we go. That's me. My intro there, which I skipped over a lot of that. I have a history with online gaming. I started off with Daikyu Muds, text-based online role-playing games, vaguely D&D-esque, all text, none of the niceties that you have now with 3D interfaces and all of that. This was some 15 years ago or so. I've been implementer and world designer. I enjoyed both of these tasks. I didn't do so much coding, but I was very interested with the background, the actual game aspects of it and getting the balance right. I played Star Wars Galaxies for quite a while, and now I'm a developer for Star Wars Galaxies A New Hope, an independent programmer to program or project to develop an emulator for this. Here we go with what is emulation. So the difference is for an MMORPG emulation or for an MMORPG emulator that you have a client-server model where everybody who's playing the game, whether it be EQ or Ultima Online or Star Wars Galaxies or Horizons, you name it, you as a player have a copy of the client program. You don't have the whole program. You can't really do anything with that yourself. there's usually only one server, one official server farm that is run by the company that runs a game. There are similar games out there that have, you know, that are open source, but usually there's still only one official source for these. The client is pretty much useless on its own without a server to talk to, and so it's a server that we want to emulate here. An MMORPG emulator does a few things differently than something that may just be emulating a standard standalone program. It needs to pretend to be the server so that the client that you already have, that's already coded, that already has all the nice graphics in it, has all the text files for many things depending on the server, can now talk to the server itself and actually run. So you can get on and you can run your character around in the world that you're familiar with without, say, in this case, talking to Sony Online's servers. You do this, you know, you would talk to a different third-party server. If any of you are familiar with, like, Neverwinter Nights, it'd be similar to that. People can set up their own worlds if they have an emulator for an MMORPG. So they could set up an EQ emulator, which has been around for a good long time. Ultima Online emulators have been around for a long time, people running their own shards, things along those lines. So long as the server responds in the appropriate manner, the client will continue to do what it does best, which is, you know, it will sit there and let you as a user interact with the server so that you can log in, you can play, you can get on there, it'll display the world for you, it will retrieve information from the server for new updates, it will generate the world that you're that is surrounding you so that your client can then display that for you. An emulator server in its complete form, in other words, if you wanted to truly emulate the game fully, which is what ANH's goal is here with SWG, is we really want to have the full shebang. We want to have the whole thing there. We don't want to stop. We don't want people just running on and doing PvP. We want people to be able to come on, play all classes, do all crafting and all of that. In that case, it's not merely a facade. It's not just something that sits there and stupidly answers back when the client sends it a message. It doesn't just say the right thing. It's a dynamic server. It can communicate with it between multiple clients so that you can see other players. It can, you know, deal with changes. It can deal with the whole thing. So you're really building a full game server on the back end. You have the client already written for you, which is both a bonus and a bit of a drag because you have to work with that client. You can't do a thing to that pre-compiled binary that is the client to make it get past any sort of hurdles with your server. You can't make it any smarter. You're constrained by what the original specs were that the developers originally came up with to, say, use UDP protocol to communicate with the server or between the server and client, and, you know, any other limitations that they put in there, you're stuck with those. But on the other hand, you don't have all those graphics to do. Why would somebody want to write an MMORPG emulator? It's definitely not the easiest thing in the world to do. It takes a lot of organization, but some people see it as a good challenge and a chance to learn. There are many aspects of this, as I'll get into, and there's a lot that you can learn while you're doing this. On the other hand, the people who are in it fully to learn probably aren't going to come up with the best product. You know, they aren't necessarily going to come up with the best final version. So some people do it, such as we are, to regain a lost game. Star Wars Galaxies has been changed massively from the period in which it started, and, you know, where they've removed classes and other things that many people found near and dear to their hearts. And when you've had your virtual world that you've lived in quite a bit, maybe, you know, an embarrassing amount, over the last couple of years, then, you know, to have that turned upside down and say, you know, you can't even be the professions that you were, you know, now you're going to be one of these nine iconic professions. We want back how it was. We liked how it was, and Sony is unwilling or unable to provide us with, you know, classic servers so we can do that. So we're going to go about it ourselves. Again, frustration with the way that the official servers are run. There are many cases where I've seen people in the emulation community talking about, you know, starting to do the groundwork on emulating a server even before the game has gone out of beta nowadays, just because they've seen so many games go wrong. You know, between the nerfs, other game balance adjustments, such as happened with SWG, some cases, you get games where it's been neglected or people think, I could do this better. There's so much more that I could do with the interface that they've got. I could write a better story here, or I could tell a story just for my friends. But it's worth my time to write an emulator, to use this client, to be set in this world, to be able to tell my own story or to do this, you know, from my own vision. Some people see it, want to do it from a warped sense of economics. They find that it's too much to pay $15 a month to play online, so instead they're going to spend many, many, many hours of their own and other people's time to create an emulator. And that's most of those people end up in the community. They don't really do too much with this. They just think, oh, look, it's free. For some people, it's all about the fame and fortune and ego within their communities. The emulator communities are largely populated, from what I've seen, with the 17 to 23-year-old demographic, where these people on the net are trying to earn cred with their cohorts there. And so they want to come up with this. They want to be the first one to do this, to get zone on a particular server or what have you, to make some particular milestone, or be the one who has cracked the encryption or whatever. So for some people, it's more about themselves and about making the final game. There are people in one of our competing projects for SWG emulation where many of them have said they won't play on the final game. Some of them didn't play Star Wars Galaxies before. They're all in it for the emulation aspect. Also, some people want to use it for a stage for Mechanima and to be able to do things such as the, if any of you have seen on YouTube, the WoW, like WoW people or World of Warcraft people dancing to certain songs or what have you, or playing out things. If you had an emulator, then you wouldn't have to worry about somebody running through your carefully choreographed music video or anything like that. You could set it up how you want, load the props you want, make the changes you want, run it all, and you've got this. And now you can make, you know, do your own web cartoon. You could do a full-length video, however you wanted to do it. And people have already done this with mods to SWG already. I've already covered most of this here, that SWG has changed. That's why we chose to do this. That's what brought us into it. And now to get into the real meat of it, what is required to emulate an MMORPG? Well, first off, you really do need a copy of the client. That is the base thing that you're going to need for this. If you don't have the client, then you're not emulating the game, you're rewriting it, and the graphics are going to be different. Everything's going to be, you're going to be really doing a full game project on your own, and that's not really what I'm going to touch on here. So we're going to start with the idea that you have a copy of the client for the game. And normally this would be useless to you on its own. If you tried to connect and there was no server, if Sony or shut down EQ or SWG or any of these other games shut down, your client is now just worthless bits on its own. You might as well erase it unless somebody comes up with something like this. It won't do anything for you. Extensive packet captures. I don't know how many of you are familiar with networking, but the main sort of currency of the conversation between the client and server are packets, where it will send back information from one to the other saying, I'm this character, let me log in, here's my password. The server writes back, says, okay, here you go, you're route you over to this server to connect to the zone. And then the zone server picks you up and says, what it needs and so forth. So if you have all of that, then you have a much better chance of being able to emulate the client, emulate a server, than if you're starting from scratch and you only have the client binary. If you have the packet captures, you can go through, you can figure out the flow of the conversation, exactly what the client expects, because you can see both sides with a packet capture. You can see what the server is sending and what the client sends back. You can at least go through, set up a dummy which is fully static, and be able to start from there and then start playing with things. The other nice thing with a packet capture is many of these conversations between server and client are encrypted. It's not likely to be something as intense as, say, Blowfish or something like that. It's almost more of a hash than true encryption. With SWG, I think that it was more of a bit mask than anything else, so that each bit informed the encryption of the next bit by some amount using a particular key. So someone had to figure that out to start with before we could even read the packet captures in any meaningful way and see clear text data in there that then gives us more clues as to how to go. Having extensive documentation of the mechanics and details of the game are also useful. And MorePegs sort of lend themselves to this, which is very nice. That people who play in MorePegs like to document what they find, either for themselves, for their guild, for personal glory, or whatever. They'll go in there and someone will come up with, you know, everything that drops, a particular axe in a particular area, or, you know, anything that does. A particular thing, they will document it. You know, for Star Wars Galaxies, you know, all weapons were documented, crafting was fully documented. People had already reversed all of these formulas because people use this in their day-to-day gameplay. All the creature stats had been documented online in databases, which, you know, were publicly available. Some of this had been changed through the revisions, but a lot of the information was still around. That was a big help to us. So having that, definitely a bonus. If you start in trying to emulate a game that is totally dead, that everybody's given up hope on and erased all this, unless you yourself had documented it or you can track down people who had, it's going to be a very uphill battle. Ability to access the live servers is a bonus. For us, even though Sony has changed Star Wars Galaxies to their new game enhancements, the new game experience, which is not very much like the old game experience was, we can get on there and get an idea of what the protocol was like, and we can use that as a basis. For packets, a lot of the information is similar. A lot of the things are still the same. So when we are looking for documentation, we can just hop onto the live servers and say, well, what's this like? You know, where really was this? Or, I thought that it was right over here, you know, and get a second opinion from, you know, another person in our group or our communities. In some cases, people will write emulators for games which aren't changed, and that's a big help for them. They can just hop right on to the live EQ server and at least get information about the current patch level, you know, about what the packets look like, you know, what the data is being transferred, what the skills are like, and so forth. Another big help, and this isn't something that I personally use, I'm not one of our reversers, is a debugger such as OliDebug, which is a freeware and I believe open source debugger tool, which will allow you to actually set breakpoints within the client binary and step through it so that you can see when a packet arrives with a client, what is a client doing with it? Where does it send it? What's it doing with the individual parts of the data? That's really what that'd be your only hope if you had no packet captures, is that you would have to just start sitting there and sending, you know, packets at random just based on what you know, either from, you know, similar, say, you know, SWG is made by Sony, or Sony Online, so is EQ. We could have gone to EQ and looked at their stuff and had an idea of where to start, you know, where to start making things up if we didn't have packet captures. And then, of course, a packet capture tool such as Wireshark, which is another freeware tool, is definitely highly advisable. This will allow you to capture traffic on a particular port by particular parameters and then save that to be decrypted later. So that you can get information out of it as you go. But without that, you're sort of stuck. You can't, you know, that's how you look at these packets. That's how you see what the client is sending and what the server is sending. Before I go on here, is there any particular part that people would like to see me hit in particular, you know, in specific here? Is I'm going to just go over how I do the task.
Well, I'm mostly here because I'm interested in running my own server for something where the client's already been developed.
Okay.
How
you actually would run an already designed server.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll touch on that towards the end there if that's all right with you. Anybody else? Just stick.
I was wondering how difficult was your job. Did you guys have packets before the new game enhancements were implemented? So I remember it happened very satisfying.
Yeah, we had forewarning of that, and some people had captured things from CU for other reasons. There was the pre-combat upgrade, and then there's a combat upgrade, and then there's the new game enhancements, NGE. I actually, just through curiosity and not even knowing, thinking about emulating, but wanting to know more about what was going on under the hood, had made some packet captures, which is how I got involved with this. Why I sort of fell in with the crowd that's working on it is that I said, hey, I think that I actually captured packets, and I'm a pack rat. Let me go and look through my old hard drives. Hey, look, there they are.
One other thing related to that, if I remember correctly, wasn't like a full expansion release like days before the NGE this event?
Pretty much. Ooh, yeah, a little too close.
To implement that expansion as it was beforehand,
Implementing that expansion and some of the other things such as Kashyyyk, the Wookiee world, were done with a different type of terrain generator. It required a height map, and we haven't fully reversed that yet. We'll get off task a little bit and do fun things like adding in a new world, which was one of the things that it's one of the sort of promises of this is that we found the worlds that they didn't finish building, Tanab. And we went through and we fixed the one thing that it needed, a skybox, and then you could log in and there's nothing there. So we developed tools so that we could go and then put in a city on it and all of that. So now we've got a fully populated extra world for whenever we get done. It's sitting there and ready, and people on our test server can go on there, run around, and interact with NPCs who interact at the level of saying quack. I think right now they all just say quack. I didn't do that. So there's a lot that you can do once you have an emulator. Is you can change a whole bunch, and you can implement your own content. A lot of that is related to the server-side files. In our cases, the worlds are all things that tell you about the terrain in the worlds, what the terrain looks like, where bushes are, where the trees are. All of that is on the client side because it's a real pain to get that in real time off of from the server. You wouldn't want to send that every time. When there are updates, if they found some place where people get snagged in the terrain or something like that, or they've changed something, added new content, then they will, that you'll download more files, and your client will then read those instead. And then in the cases of what you're talking about, they will actually update the client EXE itself so that it can read a new type of file as well and make use of these height maps and other features, such as, I can't remember what it's called, instances for things like Kashyyyk, where you can go through a door and get to one of six identical places. Something that World of Warcraft has tons of, but that Star Wars Galaxies only had a couple of. To get back to this, for the basic approaching this task, decrypting and figuring out the game's network protocol is really the first hurdle, as I said. Without the packet logs, you're at a severe disadvantage. You really would need those. And people who are planning, I've seen people who are like, yeah, such and such game, the Conan game's about to launch. I'm in the beta. I'm already capturing packets, And I think that they're a little bit crazy here, but they want to have a leg up, because what if the Conan game gets its own new game enhancements and it was really great before that? Now they've got this information which really is invaluable for this particular task. Looking back on games that have gone by, you really are going to have to search around. I mean, we're constantly looking for leads for people who might have captured pre-CU packets beyond my own. I think we found one other, and we found a lot from the combat upgrade, but without, even those have been changed, things don't work quite the same way, the protocol has changed, and the protocol can change from patch level to patch level. For any of you who play in Morpegs, you'll know that they'll push out new patches, things will be fixed, broken, changed, and the protocol may change behind everything as well in that time in order to support new features. So the packets may or may not be directly applicable, no matter when you get them from. Even if you think that they're from the right period, they may just give you hints. There may still be a lot to do. The next thing that I would say that one should do is to code a low-level dummy server, something where it's pretty much a static server. All it does is you can log in. You don't get to enter your name. You're going to log in as Bob, and you're going to look like a certain thing. You're going to load into a particular spot in the world, and all you're really wanting to do is test out new commands, to try out things, to make sure that your packet breaks and the breakdowns of the packets that you do are correct, that they actually are meaningful to the client, so that when your client sends a command, that your server picks it up and your server sends a batch of packets back. And what does your client do? Does it crash, you know, which would be bad, or does it actually, you know, your character suddenly, you know, does a backflip and, you know, draws both of his weapons like you thought it would, you know, or does your character log out, you know, is it what you expected? This is a way that you can actually test out what you're doing properly.
Star Wars Galaxy, is collision detection
compliant? To some degree, it is aware of what's in the client. It has, but there is some collision detection on the server level for the NPCs and everything, of course. But for the client is what's keeping you from running through a building.
So basically, you can just have a report and it'll take care of
Yeah. Exactly. Fortunately, the client takes care of a lot of stuff for you. And that's the other thing that you really do learn when you're working on all this is that, you know, people throughout throughout the forums for Star Wars Galaxies dissed the programmers horribly. And I'm sure I never did that myself. But you really get a better understanding about what goes into all of this, how much they had to think it through, and how much they had to make decisions about how much do you trust the client. You know, when some guy logs in and he's modded one of his files so that there is nothing on his world, he's just got a flat, empty world, and now he can run through any building, you know, or there are only the terminals so he can interact, you know, or he's just, you know, you could change all sorts of things on the client side if they don't do other checks. So you really start to understand the nitty-gritty of this and the challenges that people who do this professionally are up against. Once you've started coding the dummy, then you can start to move forward a little bit there. You aren't going to get into writing a server that people can play in for some time. You're going to be spending time, you know, just reverse engineering things, trying to figure out how it all worked. Trying to rush into a client or into writing something that people can, you know, basically run around in it with a naked tune and, yeah, I don't know, see the world that they missed, you know, that they probably could log into, you know, live right now and just see it in a different format, you know, isn't going to be useful to you that much. But you have your dummy. It's probably just going to be a single user thing originally so that you can test out your packets. You can run debugging directly against a client, which can also, like I said, help determine the flow of where things go, what data is actually used and how it is used. Research is the other big thing that you need to have going on here. This is by no means a single-prong thing and by no means a task that one person can really take care of, you know, to handle on their own. While the protocol is being figured out and documented, it's a good time to start other people who may not be so technically savvy going around all of those websites that hopefully still exist for you and going through their own files and memories, the old forums and all of that, to dig up information about how things worked so that when you get around to the coding, you actually have something to code. You don't just get on there and say, all weapons do 5 damage and the bigger ones, they do 10, you know, because you just don't know. Instead, you really have to do a lot of research. And we've, you know, for the ANH team, we've really been lucky that we found somebody who's, you know, dedicated and able to do this because it's a thankless task and it's never ending. And as soon as you get something done, then we want, you know, okay, well, why don't you go put that on the wiki? You know, it's you really have to be able to get somebody who's good at this, at presenting information in a useful manner, and your specifications are likely to change over time as to how you want the data. But the first thing is, of course, to find it. If you don't have it, you know, it can go away. Sites have shut down in the time that we've been working on this, and the Internet Archive only does so much for you. Like I mentioned before, some of this information is already stored on the client. That's a big help. You know, appearances and all of that, all of those files are there. All the 3D meshes are on the client. There's a very little information, you know, of a sort of hardcore nature about what a planet is like that's on the server side, except for certain things such as terminals and other dynamically spawned items that we can go through and we can either figure out where it should be because we played the game, or we can go onto the live server in this case and find them. Let's see. As to coding, like I said, it isn't the first thing you're going to do in that sense. You're going to write your dummy server. You're going to write tools to do all this stuff, something to automate your packet analysis We have tools for numerous things, but the first thing that one of the first things that we came up with, though, was something that would go through and apply the decryption to our packet captures, and also go through and use the command, interpret their commands, which were just sent as CRCs, into something meaningful to a human, so that instead of seeing a 4-byte hex code that means, you know, do this sort of attack, then we see the attack name, and we get much better idea there, and it tells us what sort of packet it is, so that people who are then going through and trying to document those formats have a better, you know, can just look at that, and it's much faster than trying to do each one and decrypt it by hand. That's, you know, you need a lot of tools, and so having people on in your group that can do that, write tools, is very handy. You also need somebody who's savvy about database development, somebody who, you know, ideally has worked with a relational database or can get cozy with some books and hopefully get the idea at least. SWG is an extremely complex game with, you know, very in-depth crafting, combat that had many options, varied zoo of animals and NPCs that you could meet. All of this stuff will need to be able to be supported in a dynamic manner. You can't just do this in a flat file. You know, it's not. Some games are less less complex and don't require so much. But for this, I would recommend, and just as an IT professional, you know, a database is really the way to go. It's not that hard. You know, you can find somebody who that's all that they can do to contribute. You know, you can set up MySQL, and it'll support something like this these days. It is robust enough. You don't have to run what Sony ran, you know, which would be high-end Oracle database software, you know, that requires specialized hardware. You also are going to discover more about the data that you're going to need, so your database needs to develop over time. Yes?
PostgreSQL doesn't need any licensing, you don't have to pay to.
Yeah, likewise for MySQL. Yeah, Postgres would have been my first choice, but more people are familiar with MySQL. But both of those are robust open source options for this. You know. So your team would need to, you need to have reversers. You can find people like this on communities dedicated to game hacking, among other things, people who have already have experience with running OlliDebug on an EXE are, you know, very useful to have around. These people can, you know, whip right through this and know what they're up against. They know how to set the breakpoints. And they're probably interested in this from the challenge, you know, or maybe just because they will get cred in their community. Like, hey, I'm working on this project, and I just helped them get zoned. You know, that's, you know, another notch in their belt for, you know, with their peers on their sites. So you got the game hacking, and the game emulation communities where people like this hang out. You also have hacking challenge forums where people will learn how to do things, such as doing reverse engineering, things where people learn more about, you know, I guess you could call it from more of a white hat aspect. They learn how Trojans and so forth work. They learn how to work, everything. They work from a hex editor on up to using OlliDebug and using things such as packet analysis. You need packet analysts. People who actually, you know, have worked on the network are useful. You know, somebody who knows what a packet is, knows what UDP is, knows, you know, the in and outs of that. That's very useful. Especially UDP, it's not that straightforward. You really do need to know what the caveats are, and hopefully your programmer will know, or your coder will know something about network coding as well. Thus, coders and potentially scripters, coders for the final product or project, and also for writing the tools along your way, and scripters who can do things such as that to allow you to modify what's in the game as you go without having to necessarily have the source. So you can write it in something like Lua or Perl or so forth, something that's more of a non-compiled way to modify what goes on in the game, like what NPCs say, or crafting, or things that aren't necessarily fully real-time. Yes?
So you had coders who were specifically designing tools for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did you inherit any tools from the original developers, too?
No, we... we inherited hints about the tools that they had, such as we know from the files that that SOE had created there, that they had a tool for managing quests and the text that when you interacted with an NPC, it was very scripted. You could say certain things. You had your choice of things to say. They would have their conversation tree. They had a tool for this, and it happened to tag the file saying, do not edit this file. This was generated by... And they didn't always have that. We also have found online interviews where they referred to that tool. You can also do things such as track down patents, disable patent tools like that, and get some idea of what they had for, like, they had a terrain editor. And there's no way that we can really fully rebuild the terrain editor that they had, but it gives us a leg up in looking at their files to say, oh, okay, so this is feathering for the this particular thing here, and that they definitely used a not truly a fractal but coherent noise to generate the terrain and overlays on top of that. Now, because of that, you know, we can do something like, you know, make our own, you know, reuse the world that they had already made for the terrain, flatten out an area, put in a city. That part was the city was easy, but flattening the terrain, we had no idea how to do that previously. Going in there and writing our name to just for the ego of it in raised terrain, we could do all that now. We have fine control over it, but we didn't get any tools that they actually had. We've generally developed our own as we needed them. The packet analysis tool was the first one, and now the guy who wrote that is one of our main coders, so he has a pretty good insight into how things work, fortunately. So you also need the database admin. You need researchers. You really do need researchers, people who are willing to take the time and put in the effort and really get you a product, because a lot of people will say, oh, I can go look this up for you, and they never do. So that falls into the hurdles that you're likely to run into here. That falls under the herding volunteer cats. None of us get paid. This is totally non-for-profit. SOE and Lucas Entertainment Corp would come down on us with like a ton of bricks if we tried to charge for any of this. And they, there were actually talks with both of them early on, because they wanted sort of, like a father taking aside a boy and saying, so what is your, intents with my daughter? And they're like, what is it that you want to do with our intellectual property here? And like, well, we're going to write the emulator, we're not planning on charging for it. No, we're not going to try and compete with you. This is a whole other thing than what you're offering now and all that. And they had their own, what they wanted, their expectations for how this would be then provided to the public once it's done. And really, once it's done, we'll go and talk to them again and do it. Probably be able to come to some sort of happy medium. The other group that we had splintered off from before had actually told LucasArts and SOE basically to take a hike, and we didn't think that was right, which is one reason that we went away. We really didn't like the idea that what we had worked on here could be just totally squashed. They are a generally younger group. They didn't understand the nuances of things such as the, Blizzard versus BNetD and things such as those, where, this is a tenuous thing. We are playing with somebody else's intellectual property, even though it's not, we aren't, the client is already there. These people already have the client, but you could easily argue that we are going against the, various shrink wrap contracts and capturing packets, reverse engineering all this, even looking at the files. That's probably they may not really like that truly, but they're willing to go forward with this. And Lucas, just like with the 501st, they don't want to. They like their fans. We're the people who, for Star Wars, we buy the toys. We indoctrinate our kids into this, all of that. So it's. They don't really want to make us into martyrs by saying, we wouldn't let you fix this, what we all viewed as a broken game. And there are a large number of people who believe that it's a broken game.
So you're kind of playing Lucas against Sony, right?
No. Sony is like, well, whatever Lucas says, they own the... and Sony's like, Sony hasn't come down on like the EQ emulator, where it is all of their IP there and all of their code. They've come down on individual emulators at the servers, which this bears to you. I think it was Winter's Bane started to look too much like they were charging for subscriptions or whatever, because it does cost a lot in terms of bandwidth. Each player for Star Wars Galaxies, from what we've estimated, takes up like 2.5 kilobits, I think it is, per second, per player. you know, and that's just on average, you know. So if they're really in a large PvP battle or they run through a large group of mobs or whatever, they're going to, we'll be sending more packets to them. That's a lot of bandwidth that you've got to deal with there if you're doing an open public server, if you aren't just doing something for your friends. And most people agree that, yeah, Star Wars Galaxies is really about the community that you really do need. It's so intertwined, you need a lot of people. So it's not going to be cheap to run the servers, and a lot of server communities are already forming, which really brings us to the top one there, community relations. Most open source projects don't have the issue that we have, where we are writing a server that other people will run, and then other people will play on that server. However, we end up, or at least the original group there that we split off from, was dealing directly with the end players. And there really isn't, you know, the end players were like telling them, you know, we want this in there. We don't want to see this. And how are you going to do Jedi and all this stuff? Which, you know, if you're writing, you know, MS, you know, say OpenOffice, you expect people, you know, you're dealing with your end users there. But if you're writing, say, an IRC server, you aren't necessarily going to be talking to people who are writing, you know, who are actually using clients to get onto your IRC server software. You're going to be talking to the people who are using it, who are like, well, can this run on, you know, this hardware and all this? And our community has these concerns. So they had opened this up so that in a way that we felt wasn't very healthy and really dragged things down, sort of slowed things down, made for a lot of politics, so that instead of dealing with people who are going to run servers, we in many ways end up dealing with the end player who's like, so can I get on your server and run around and, you know, do nothing, you know, just because I'm bored? Or, you know, how are you going to do Jedi, all these things? You know, are you going to have this in there? Are you going to have that? And, you know, this was a feature, not a bug. We like this thing. Are you going to keep this? And we're like, we don't care. We're going to try and code it in, make it flexible, and let the server administrators, like yourself there, be able to choose what they want, how they want to do this. How do they want to do Jedi? Let them script the whole thing. And it's none of our concern. You know, we'll then have to pick where we want to play. And we don't feel this is a normal situation. They take donations directly from the player community and say, you know, oh, well, we need this to continue on. We don't think that's right. We think that donations should go to the servers because the servers are where this is going to run. The servers are who are really going to need the money. We can all, you know, we can pitch in to run a little test server, and we don't need, you know, we aren't getting salaries, and, you know, heck, we're, you know, 30-something IT pros mostly, and, you know, we've got a little bit of money. We aren't scratching around for pizza change because we stay up coding all night and we feel that, you know, we need some love, you know, from our community. So that can be difficult there. So you have to manage how you're going to present yourself to your community. Because it's a game, you may get people who have certain expectations about dealing directly with you, even though they're more of your customer's customers as opposed to the direct person who you should be dealing with, in my opinion, in our opinion, the server administrators. You may have competition, which seems odd. We're all working to the same goal. We want to bring pre-CU at Star Wars Galaxies back, but we have very different ways of doing it. And there are three groups working on this right now. We're on good terms with one. You know, we'll trade information with them. We've had members who've been, you know, with us and with them. And the other one we're not on good terms with at all. We've had issues where our code repository has been broken into. You know, things that should have been better secured than they weren't. And they, you know, had enough free time on their hands that they went and dug and, you know, stole information from us. And that sort of thing can be very demoralizing, especially to your coders who think, okay, great, I really didn't want this stuff out there. Maybe we would have gone open source eventually, but I really don't like my code being out there. It really does hurt to see this stuff going out there. You know, your database with all this information that you spent hours and hours gathering, suddenly the other people here who you don't really cotton to so well have this information. You know, that hurts. I've already touched on the legal concerns, the herding cats. You know, this has taken more than a year. People burn out. You know, anybody who works in the corporate sector, you know, you've probably been through it yourself. You can only do one job for so long. And you start looking around and, you know, I'm sort of more on the management side of this. We have to just take it on faith that, you know, our coder will take it, will come back after he's been on walkabout for a little bit. You know, he suddenly disappears. It's not like we have his phone number. We've got email, but he can ignore that. You know, if he gets burned out, his work starts to get too much, he's got to put bread on his table. So, you know, we can't really fault him for that. So you want to have volunteers, you need to get quality people, you know, who know what they're doing and who like what they're doing and can spend some time on it. And that can be very tricky. Whether or not you want to be open or closed source, often that, you know, we let that go back to the coders. You know, we don't, our coders are the ones who are developing the main information here. They really wanted to be able to use this code elsewhere and not, you know, they might use it for a more commercial project of their own, and it's not Star Wars related. You know, they could. You know, this is theirs. This is something they came up with. Determining a target platform. We're sort of stuck on Windows, which was really chagrining to me as I'm a Unix guy and work with FreeBSD and love that. And I'm like, okay, running servers on Windows to me is totally anathema. I just can't see this, but it works. And also determining if you want to do things such as, you know, for you, you would have to think about things such as, do you want, you know, if your server would allow it, would you cluster, you know, so that you could have multiple physical machines, which is something we can support, so that one runs, like each planet runs on a different machine for the zone there. We could have a different login server, a different database server, even multiple database servers, all on different physical machines that then talk to each other. You know, so it really depends on what your resources are and then what, you know, we think that our target market, you know, what who our audience is, what they'll be able to do and what they want. Yeah, so we went with this to give maximum flexibility. You could run all the processes on one beefy machine if you don't have that many people. And also resources for continued development. We pay for all of our stuff out of pocket. Some people can't do that. Different people have different needs. And so on your team, you may want to make sure you have somebody who, you know, doesn't mind dropping a little bit on, you know, or has the resources already. You know, say they work in a at an ISP and can get free hosting, you know, for an actual server or that sort of thing. You need that. You know, that's very helpful. I'm going to leave on this and go to questions real quick. That's everything that I've already covered there and then some. Most of the tools you'll write yourself. I'm not quite sure how much time I have left, if it's five minutes or more. 10 minutes? Okay. Oh, good. I'll take 10 minutes. Any questions, comments, anything about the project, about this in general? Yeah. Yes?
Seeing as you're making modifications for maps and such, are you going to provide a copy of this client? Seeing as you're making modifications to the map and such, you're going to provide a copy of this client, or
we can make available our modifications, but the client is something that people actually do need to buy on their own. All the people who think that it's free, you know, this is mainly intended for people who've already played, you know, who have a legal version of the game. And that was one of the issues with, like, the BNetD case, is that it had nothing to verify that people had a legitimate copy of, you know, a Blizzard game in order to be able to play it. And that was part of the big angle there, is that, you know, there's no way you know that this is a valid client. And so far, Sony doesn't seem to be too concerned with that with EQ, and didn't raise that with us. So, but it's not something where we can have on our site, download the client here. You know, it's more like, you know, and that it isn't directly our interest either, because we're not, you know, the people who need the client can deal with their community, and their community can, you know, tell them, you know, go to the bargain bin, you know, pick up a new copy of this, you know, it's $10. You know, after that, you don't pay anything. You know, it's good. You know, you don't need anything there. You need some updates, you know, that you're now entitled to because you bought the game. And then you may have specific files for new things. Yeah, we'd have a patcher to, and we've already got that, basically, something that would go in there. And we can even run this. I don't know if this will do the right thing. Yeah, there we go. That can run this as a, let's see if I can get some of these screenshots up here just to go. You can run it in a separate folder, so you don't have to overwrite anything. I might just go through some of these. This is, you know, some of the stuff that we've, oh, come on, maximize. It's not that hard. And some of the things that we've gotten for the game that people who played the game will recognize, such as surveying, all the minerals and all that, all the resources. Running around, inventory, you know, that's an older one where we didn't have everything labeled properly yet. Any other questions? I might just flip through these here. Otherwise, One thing, I guess, for me, if anybody is interested in this, I've got business cards with the information for our site so that you can go there, find a community. If you're interested in maybe helping out as a coder, if you have experience with that or with reversing stuff, you know, we're looking for new people at all times. We try to keep it as low stress as possible. We can't promise you anything but, you know, a T-shirt at best and, maybe some nice stickers.
I'm watching your presentation. I have a question. Is any of your work started to lead to development of an open, independent server and independent client arrangement?
No.
So it's truly cross-platform and open
there's,
source?
There's something out there called Mangos, which I that actually, or maybe Mangos, I'm not sure, but it's spelled like mangoes, like multiple, you know, orange fruit here, that is supposed to be a generic MMORPG platform. I think they may have a client. I'm not sure. I kept meaning to look into it more, but it's not something we use. But there are open source things out there for, you know, that people have done for generic MMORPG to do all the heavy lifting of combat and all of that, because a lot of this stuff is pretty much it's the same. You know, once you've gotten all the packets decrypted, like in our case, we're going to write it all custom to SWG. We are going to potentially make that source available, but because our coders aren't too keen on it, we're not sure. A lot of our tools we will make available and have made available to other people, but once it goes live or once we do a first push to the communities, then we'll make more of that available so that they can play with this. They can do the world editing on their own. Anybody could sit there and play around with this, and ideally anybody could, you know, download the server, set it up on a machine, and be able to run it for themselves if they have a client. So they could just sit and play around on their own, you know, load in whatever they want, you know, have their little god mode server or what have you.
Hello. I used to do this stuff about 5 years ago when soft ice is more in vogue instead of Ollie debug. And back in the day when we were starting to reverse an encryption protocol, like, you know, a login protocol, we used to start out with a proxy or a bot, mm-hmm. something on the client side, because usually the encryption is symmetric, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to keep hackers out, not to really guard the communication so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my advice. If you want to start out reversing any encryption scheme, put a breakpoint on send or send to, and just backtrack a little bit, and you'll find where the encryption happens. It's usually right before it gets sent out. And then you can load that into a proxy or a bot and interact with the server for the few initial steps. That gives you a good idea of how to start out.
Yeah, that's a good thing there, is you can get an idea. You know, if you have a live server to connect to, that's another way to capture all of this without using something like Wireshark. And you could also use that to inject other traffic, which is one of the things that we now, because all of this has already been figured out, hackers all have a leg up too. They all know what the base protocol is because that's out there. There was an open source version released by the original group, but it stank, basically. It was a dead end. It wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't multi-threaded. It was, you know, it was good for getting on and running around. And some other guys have gone through and played with that, you know, to learn from it. But it never really, it isn't good for anything on its own. But somebody could learn from it to write something akin to like WoW Glider or whatever that could play the game for you. These are all fairly recent, and those are the same ones I showed. That, you know, can now intercept the communications, act like a proxy, and say, you know, do things faster than you could, you know, set triggers to automatically heal yourself or run away or, you know, make you go out and mine for resources or what have you. I mean, the possibilities are really limited to your imagination there. I always enjoyed on the on the old text-based DocuMuds doing a lot of botting myself, so I can't really, I can't frown on that too much. It's something to learn from. So, anything else? All right, that's it. I hope I was useful to some of you, at least educational. Thank you.